Chapter 30. Ahriman shook his head, wondering why he was lying flat on his back amid a growing cloud of dust and rubble. He didn't remember falling or being struck, but rolled onto his side as a surging pain and cramp seized his limbs. He grunted in pain, knowing all too well what that pain signified. He rolled to his feet and looked to the west in time to see a seething column of bitter fire piercing the heavens. A surge tide flowed from the great ocean into the world, and the cramping pain in his muscles told him how powerful he could be if he would only unleash those powers. Shimmering light built behind his eyes, and raw ether dripped from his fingertips, liquefying the ground when it touched into a soup of impossible form. Every single warrior, friend and foe, had been struck down by that terrible explosion, the shock wave spreading through the city like an earthquake. What buildings were left standing after the punishing barrages were brought down and cast to ruin by its force. The light diminished as whatever vessel had torn the veil between worlds open was destroyed. Ahriman saw a blazing humanoid form lurching drunkenly on the horizon, like a burning wicker man set alight by Highland savages to please their heathen gods of the harvest. A flickering image appeared in his mind, a taunting vision of a future he could not change, and he closed his eyes as the towering battle engine that had fallen on Coriovallum died for a second time. Ahriman had seen where it would fall, but had no desire to watch the destruction of the Corviday Pyramid. He heard the earth-shattering sound of screaming steel and breaking glass, the sound of all that might yet be known reduced to ashes and lost hope. The monstrous battle engine crashed to earth, sending another powerful tremor through the city as the Puree Temple exploded in a simultaneous fireball. Ahriman stared in open-mouthed horror at this trifecta of destruction. This was the death knell for his legion. The perimeter was no more. The entire northwest sector was gone, and the enemy would pour through in unstoppable numbers as soon as they realized the boon they had just been handed. The lull created by the destruction balanced on a knife edge, and the Thousand Suns were the first to recover their wits. As the Space Wolves picked themselves up, the Scarab Occult struck with a dreadful torrent of lethal powers. Blazing cones of lightning seared the enemy, gleeful arcs of crackling power leaping from warrior to warrior. Hissing fire swept through the streets, devouring all it touched, melting stone and ceramite and flesh in the inferno of its incredible heat. At first, Ahriman dared to hope that the surging etheric energy might yet be their salvation, but his hopes were dashed seconds later. A warrior 10 meters to his left screamed in abject horror as his body erupted in a mass of hideous growths. His armor buckled and cracked as his mutant flesh spilled out with horrid fecundity. Another warrior followed seconds later, his body borne aloft on a seething geyser of blue flame that consumed him in the time it took to draw breath. Yet more hideous changes were being wrought upon the Thousand Suns, vile appendages erupting from splitting armor plates, squamous limbs and rugose growths pushing like jelly from gorgets and through bullet wounds with grotesquely wet sounds. Warriors screamed and fell to their knees as decades of suppressed flesh change ripped its way to the surface. Dozens were falling prey to its malign influence with every second, and the cries of horror were not confined to the Space Wolves. The Spire Guard fell back from their erstwhile allies as the degenerate things the Thousand Suns were becoming turned on them with mindless hunger to feed their rampant growth. "Everyone back!" shouted Ahriman, knowing that this position was lost. Those Thousand Suns who resisted the flesh change took up the cry, and even a cursory glance told Ahriman they were the oldest and most experienced warriors of the Legion. He was glad to see that Sobek was amongst them. With the remnants of the Spire Guard, he and his practicus led the survivors back through the ruined edges of Old Tiska, moving swiftly along shell-crated streets and avenues filled with fire and rubble. Ahriman checked his weapon loadout, seeing he had a mere 5 magazines remaining to him. His Hecker staff was still a potent weapon, its length crackling with invisible lines of force. He willed it to powerlessness, for he dare not wield it with so much wild energy filling the air. He would have need of his staff before the end of the fight, but he forced all thought of its use from his mind until he needed it most. No sooner had he quelled his powers than he sensed a ghostly presence probing the ether around him. a questing tendril that spoke of another mind seeking his. Ahriman felt the primitive cunning of a hunter, the patience and animal circling that spoke of long years spent on the frozen tundra, with nothing to warm the flesh but fur torn from the still warm corpse of native prey beasts. It took no great skill to recognize the presence, for he had swum the great ocean with this seeker. Otha Weirdmake was hunting him, and Ahriman allowed his etheric presence to bleed into the air, psychic spur to draw the rune priest to him. "Come, find me, Weirdmake," he whispered. "I welcome it." Ahriman led his tattered remnants through the ruins of his beloved city, picking up scattered warbands of shell-shocked Thousand Suns warriors from the west and east as they converged on Oculum Square. He counted several hundred close by, and only hoped there were others deeper in the city, for they would need more if they were to hold the Space Wolves and Custodes at bay. Oculum Square was just ahead, and as Ahriman saw the toppled, bullet-ridden statues of a number of lions, he suddenly recognized where his line of retreat had led, the Street of a Thousand Lions. He almost laughed as he saw that the leftmost lion in the street had escaped destruction, its golden hide as polished and pristine as if it had only recently left the sculptor's workshop. He paused in his flight from Old Tisca and reached up to touch the rearing beast. "Maybe you really are lucky," he said, feeling foolish but not caring. "I could use some of it if you have any to spare." "Superstition doesn't suit you," said a voice behind him, and Ahriman smiled with genuine relief as he saw the limping form of Hathar Mart in the midst of the retreating warriors. Ahriman ran over to meet him, and they embraced like devoted brothers. "What happened?" asked Ahriman, turning from the rearing lion. "The Wolf King," replied Hathor Mart, and Ahriman needed no further clarification. "Faustus Dakar?" he asked, as they set off south once more. Hathor Mart looked away, and Ahriman saw the dreadful waxiness to his skin, an unhealthy pallor that was as alien and abhorrent to a biomancer as any gross mutation. To see the normally absurdly handsome Hathor Mart so broken was almost as unsettling as anything Ahriman had seen in the course of this nightmarish battle. "The flesh change took him," said Hathor Mart, the terror of what he had seen haunting his eyes. "Valdor of the Custodes killed him, but I think Phocis Dakar let him. Better death than to live as a monster. Aura Magma has gone too." Ahriman had no special regard for Aura Magma beyond his status as a fellow captain, but he grieved the loss of Phocis Dakar. If he lived through this horror, he would grieve his friend in the proper manner. And once again he realized that only death allowed him to recognize a fellow warrior as a true friend. He forced his grief for Phocis Dakar down, keeping to the lower enumerations to close himself off from the loss. He wondered how the loss had affected Hathor Mart. Coagulated blood coated the left side of Mart's skull, but that was the least of his concerns. His skin shimmered with an internal light that rippled with the urge to change, and Ahriman hoped the vain warrior would resist the temptation to use his powers to stop it. "Where are we going?" gasped Hathor Mart as they ran. "The second line of defence," said Ahriman. "What second line of defence?" "An east-to-west line between the pyramids of the Athenians and the Pavoni, with a great library at its centre and the pyramid of Fotep at its back." "That's a long line," pointed out Hathor Mart. "I know, but it is shorter than the last one. If we can hold it long enough to allow the bulk of Tisca's citizens to reach whatever safety the pyramid of Fotep can provide, then we'll have achieved something worthwhile." "It's not much." "It is all we can do," said Ahriman, running south while casting hurried glances over his shoulder as he heard the first signs of pursuit. The horrific spawn many of his warriors had become would delay the Space Wolves, but Russ's butchers would carve their way through them soon enough. Ahriman swallowed his anger, knowing it would do no good, for it had too many targets. He had anger enough to last 1,000 lifetimes. Anger at the unthinking violence Russ and the Custodes had unleashed against them. Anger at the death of so many brave warriors who deserved better. Anger at how easily he had allowed himself to turn away from asking questions that needed to be asked. But most of all, anger at Magnus for leaving them to face their doom alone. Ahriman led his warriors across Oculum Square, past the great urn-topped column at its centre, which, like the lion, had miraculously avoided destruction in the shelling. The square was a mass of people fleeing the wrath of the space wolves and custodies, for the blades and bullets of the enemy were uncaring which of the city's inhabitants they cut down. Panicked people poured into the square from all its radiant streets, heading towards its southernmost exit, a wide avenue incongruously named the Palace of Wisdom. A shattered arch lay in ruins around its entrance, and toppled columns lay strewn next to shattered statues of long-dead scholars of the Athenaeum. The gold-skinned form of Prospero's great library was barely visible through the smoke pouring from its shattered sides, and beyond it, the gleaming crystal form of Magnus's great pyramid reared over all. More survivors of the etheric burst and the Titan's fall poured into Ockelham Square, and Ahriman estimated at least 3,000 warriors of his legion. Compared to the strength that had been fighting at the start of the battle, it was pitifully few. But it was more than he had expected. How many, he wondered, had fallen to the enemy, and how many to the flesh-changed running rampant through their ranks? He pushed the question aside. It was irrelevant, and he had more important matters to deal with. He ran towards the Palace of Wisdom, leaping a marble representation of the mad scholar Alhazred, with Sobek and Hathor Mart to either side of him. The Palace of Wisdom was paved with black marble slabs, each one engraved with an uplifting cautionary or instructional quote from some of the great library's most prominent contributors. Dust, rubble, and panicked citizens of Tisca obscured many of the slabs, but sensing a cosmic order to those that remained, Ahriman kept his eyes fixed on the ground as he ran. The first slab bore the words, "Without wisdom, power will destroy the one who wields it." Knowing there was no such thing as coincidence, Ahriman focused his attention on each slab as he ran across it. Seekers desire power, but not wisdom. Power without wisdom is dangerous. Better to have wisdom first. Those who have knowledge do not predict. Those who predict do not have knowledge. If you abuse power, you will be burned, and then you will learn. If you live. And lastly, Ahriman smiled with grim amusement as he saw a slab that read, "Only the fool wishes to go into battle to beat someone for the satisfaction of beating someone." The significance of these words was not lost on him, and he wondered why he had been chosen to see them. There was little he could do to affect the destiny of the Thousand Sons. Only one being on Prospero could do that. The Thousand Sons formed up on the edges of the once verdant park of the Great Library. Hathor Mart and Sobek formed the Scarab Occult, and ragged war bands in a line of armoured bodies across the park, their guns pointed to the north. A mist of burnt sap and greenery clogged the air, and the smoke from the ashen forest hung low to the ground like a noxious fog swirling around their ankles. The great library was in ruins behind them, its structure now barely recognisable as a pyramid. Its glassy sides were bathed in golden light from the fires raging throughout its many galleries. Its tip had caved in, and smoke poured from its collapsed summit like billowing spurts of lava from a steep-sided volcano. Ahriman started as a memory overlaid his vision of the great library. "What?" asked Hathor Mart, seeing his look of consternation. "It wasn't Nykir at all," said Ahriman. "I did not see the volcano at all. It was this. I saw this."
"What are you talking about?"
"On Agoru," said Ahriman with mounting horror. "I foresaw this, but I did not recognize it. I could have warned Magnus. I could have stopped this."
Hathor Mart dragged him around.
"If you saw this, it was going to happen no matter what. There's nothing you could have done," he said. "No," said Ahriman, shaking his head. "It doesn't work that way. The currents of the future are all echoes of possible futures. I could have..." "Could have is irrelevant," snapped Hathor Mart. "You didn't see this. Neither did Amon, Anku Anen, or Magnus, or anyone else in the Corvidae. So stop worrying about what you didn't see, and pay more attention to what's right in front of you." The sheer incongruity of Hathor Mart giving him advice broke the spell of immobility that held him. Ahriman nodded and turned from the great library, concentrating his attention on the defensive line. It was easier to defend than the last one, but still too long for the number of warriors they had left. The parkland was filled with ruined pavilions, low walls and decorative follies. On any normal day, its path and arbours would be filled with citizens and scholars reading words of wisdom beneath the balmy sun. Ahriman had spent many a day beneath its green and pleasant boughs, ensconced in many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore.
Now he looked on its walls, fallen trees, broken plinths, and shaded hollows as defensive positions.
"We'll hold one attack, maybe two," he said, reading the contours and angles of the devastated park. "Then we must fall back to the Pyramid of Fotep."
"I think that might be optimistic," said Hathor Mart, as Leman Russ led 6,000 Astartes and custodies towards their position, like the closing jaws of a hungry wolf. It was a sight calculated to break the defender's will, but Araman recalled a quote from a leader of old Earth and lifted his voice so every Thousand Suns warrior could hear him.
"The patriot volunteer, fighting for his country and his rights, makes the most reliable soldier on Earth," he cried, pulling his bolter in tight to his shoulder. He aimed along the top of the gun and smiled without humour as he saw Othair Weirdmake slotted neatly between the open sights of his bolter. The rune priest was way out of range to take the shot, but Araman had no intention of ending their enmity with something so banal as a bolter shell. He handed his weapon to Sobek and turned to Hathor Mart.
"Remember, Onogoro, when I told you we allowed our powers to define us and that we needed to learn to fight as Astartes again?"
"Of course," said Hathor Mart, confused as to Araman's meaning. "What of it?"
"This is that moment," said Araman, removing his helmet and dropping it to the blackened grass. "Fight these dogs and show them that, of all the mistakes they have ever made, underestimating us will be their most heinous. Fight them hard, but no one must use their powers, or it will be their undoing."
"What are you talking about? What are you going to do?"
Araman sat cross-legged on the blackened grass and gripped his hecker-staff, its gold-plated length and blue-copper bands crackling with awakened power. "Ignoring my own orders," he said, and closed his eyes.
Araman lifted his body of light from his corporeal form with a breath. The raging currents of the great ocean lapped close to the surface of the world, making the transition as easy as it had ever been. The force of the tides battering his subtle flesh was enormous, driven to fury by the heightened emotions at work within the cauldron of combat in the material universe. The flesh change sought to claim him, but he forced it down, knowing this was probably the last time he would fly the great ocean. He rose higher, seeing the blazing serpentine curve of Tisca's outline and the red haze that lay over its once proud architecture.
"Such hatred," he whispered. "Did we ever deserve so much?"
He flew from the park of the Great Library, fighting to hold his course in the face of battering currents and dangerous breakers. He felt the raw wound where the ether had broken through in the northwest, hearing the echo of a soul in torment as it was torn apart by the rapacious void predators who gathered around the pulsing wound in the hope that it would open once more. The line of enemy warriors shone with brilliant vividness, golden and red, vibrant and so sure of their purpose. They could not see how they might be wrong. Araman saw a mysterious cloud of deception lying over them and pitied them their ignorance. "If you knew how you had been betrayed, you would join forces with us and end this." Darkened shrouds hung over the advancing warriors and tanks, areas of dead space where Sisters of Silence guarded the host captains. Araman avoided them, knowing he would be hurled back to his body should he venture within such a hateful darkness. His foeman would never set foot within such darkness, for he was as hypocritical as the rest of them. Araman smiled as he saw Othair Weirdmake so proud, so arrogant, and so filled with anger that it was a wonder he could function as a human being. As much as he told himself he did this for his legion's survival, Araman was forced to admit he was going to enjoy this mission of revelation. He reached down with ghostly hands and wrenched Weirdmake's body of light from his flesh, tearing up with such violent suddenness that the rune priest's armoured limbs went as rigid as a fresh-carved statue. His comrades and acolytes rushed to his aid, but Weirdmake was beyond their help now. Araman released his nemesis as his shimmering form took shape, coalescing into a bright replica of the man below. His aura blazed with shock and anger, but that quickly turned to sly hatred as he saw who floated before him.
"Warlock," spat Weirdmake.
"Is that all you have for me, old friend?" asked Araman, folding his arms.
"Insults?" "I have sought you this day," said Weirdmake. "I know. I felt your clumsy pursuit. A neophyte of Prospero could have sensed you. How did you acquire my psychic trace?"
"Your brother in the library gave you up," said Weirdmake triumphantly. Araman laughed. "Is that what you think happened?" he asked. "If Ankuanen did so, it was because he wanted you to find me. He knew I would kill you if you did."
"I think not," said Weird Make, a golden staff appearing in his hands.
Araman shook his head, and the staff exploded into shards of fading light.
"In this place, in this realm, do you really think we will fight like that?"
Weird Make hurled himself towards Araman, his hands outstretched like claws, and his face transforming into that of a snarling wolf, with its jaws poised to tear out his throat. Araman surged to meet him, and they came together in a blazing explosion of power. Weird Make clawed at him, but Araman moved like quicksilver, evading every strike and rising higher and higher into the great ocean. Spinning like intertwined spirals of genetic code, they streaked through the ether. Weird Make attacking in a frenzy of claws and snapping bites, Araman deflecting every strike with graceful precision.
"You are the same as me," he said, evading yet another raging attack.
Weird Make broke away from Araman's blazing form and shook his head, the wolf form retreating within his shimmering flesh.
"I am nothing like you," he snarled. "My power comes from the natural cycle of birth and death of Fenris. I am a son of the storm. I am nothing like you."
"And yet you are not on Fenris," said Araman. "We call it by different names, but the power you used to call the storm and split the earth is the same power I used to scry the future and shape the destiny of my legion."
"Is this all you have for me?" snapped Weird Make. "Lies? I can believe nothing you say."
"Lies," said Araman. "Look at what you are doing to my world. I have no need of lies. The truth is my weapon." No sooner had the words left him than he shot forwards, his essence enveloping Weird Make's. He stabbed a spear of brightness into the rune priest, but this was no assault on Weird Make's body of light. It was a spear of truth.
"You cannot understand the truth without understanding the omnipresent character of the untruth you are bound to. Enlightenment is fruitless until you free yourself from the lie. The power of truth will merge with you when you become free from all forms of deception. This is my gift to you, O fair Weird Make."
Araman poured everything into the rune priest, the corruption of Horus and the betrayal of everything the Emperor had sought to create, the monstrous scale of the imminent war and the horror that lay at the end of it. Win or lose, a time of ultimate darkness was coming. And as Araman opened Weird Make to all that he had seen, he too learned all that had driven the Space Wolves and the Custodes to make such furious war upon the Thousand Suns. He saw the honeyed words of Horus and the sinister urgings of Constantine Valdor, each spoken with very different purposes, but designed to sway Leman Russ towards a destination of total destruction. The scale of this betrayal shocked him to the root of all that he was. Araman had come to terms with Horus Lupercal's betrayal, for it had its origins in the snares and delusions woven by beings to whom the passage of Vigintillions of eons were but the blink of an eye. This was all too human treachery. These were lies, told for noble reasons, but which had brought about the unintended consequences of Prospero's destruction. Anger overtook Araman, and he hurled himself at Weird Make once more, tearing into his subtle body with unthinking anger. Weird Make fought back, but his struggles were feeble, his mind aflame with the horrors Araman had shown him. They fell through the great ocean, the weight of their emotions dragging them back to their bodies. Shoals of void predators came with them, terrible abominations of nightmares undreamed, abortions of monstrous appetite, and fiends of insatiable hunger. Araman felt their presence, and shaped them further with the most hideous imaginings he could conjure, phage beasts of fang and claw, nameless forms, and vampiric bloodlust. At last they returned to the hate-bathed city of Tisca, its ghostly image like looking through a thick fog or a grimy window. Araman saw the fighting raging through the blasted park, the clash of Space Wolves and Thousand Suns, as both forces tore at one another for all the wrong reasons. Sobek, Hathor Mart, and the Scarab Occult stood sentinel over his body as the fighting pushed the Thousand Suns line inexorably back. Leman Russ was a blazing column of light as he killed warriors by the score, and Araman knew that nothing could stop this feral god from tearing the Thousand Suns apart. His two wolves, representations of light and dark, smashed warriors from their feet and ripped them to pieces, their savagery the equal of their master. Araman dragged his gaze from the Wolf King and his bestial companions and held the slump Weird Make before him. The rune priest was a broken shadow of his former haughty self. His subtle body hemorrhaged life energy, and his aura flickered with the damage Adamant's truth had wrought upon his mind. All his certainty was undone, and his soul was bare, raw, and undefended.
"This is for Anku Annan," said Adamant, and he threw a weird make to the void predators. They closed on his helpless form with hungry savagery, snapping and tearing with warp sharpened claws and vorpal fangs. It was over in seconds. The glowing morsels of the rune priest's soul devoured and lost forever.
Adamant watched with no small amount of satisfaction as Othair Weirdmake's armoured form collapsed, the body of flesh unable to survive the death of the soul. Part of him recoiled from so dark a deed, but the heart of him rejoiced to see his enemy so wholly destroyed. Adamant opened his eyes and took a deep breath, feeling the many repercussions that coloured his flesh like angry bruises. The sounds of battle were deafening, and the howling of wolves echoed throughout what was left of Tisca. In an instant, he saw that the battle for Tisca was as good as over. Prospero was lost. His grip on his Hecker staff was rigid, and he saw its gold and blue banding fade until its entire length was utterly black. The symbolism was unmistakable.
"So be it," he said.
Adamant fought back to back with Hathor Mart, holding their line together in the face of the savagery of the Space Wolves and the Emperor's Praetorians. Chain blades rose and fell, their jagged, icy teeth red with Astarte's blood, and bolters fired hard rounds that impacted and penetrated their targets without time to arm. Their line had not held against the unbridled savagery of Leman Russ, and this final stand was being made in the shadow of the Pyramid of Fotep. Shards of crystalline glass floated on the oil-scummed waters surrounding Magnus the Red's lair. The surviving populace of Tisca, who had escaped the initial wrath of the invaders, sheltered within. The last of a great lineage of scholars who had not only endured Old Night, but thrived in its wake. Armoured vehicles crushed statues and fallen tree trunks, their guns trained on the vast pyramid beneath the battle. The struggling warriors were too enmeshed for any of the gunners to draw a clear shot, and so they contented themselves with demolishing the sanctum of their enemy's Primarch. The Pyramid of Fotep shimmered in the fading light, its gleaming surface and silver towers bathed in the hellish light of its own destruction. Explosions bloomed upon the mighty crux and satyr engraved on its front, and glass rained from its ruptured flanks. Adamant knew the end was upon them, for fewer than 1,500 of the Legion remained alive. Such a force could conquer planets and quell entire rebellions with ease, but against more than 3 times their number, and facing no less a warrior than a Primarch, this was a battle that could only end one way. To fight was to doom both legions in the coming war, but Adamant could no more let these barbarians despoil his world without a struggle than he could undo the past. The Wolf King had built pyres of irreplaceable knowledge and smashed priceless artifacts unique in all the galaxy with a careless stroke of his frostblade. Such ignorance and thoughtless destruction could not go unanswered.
"I said you were being optimistic," said Hathor Mart, punching his Hecker staff through the neck of a helmetless space wolf.
Blood squirted from the ruptured jugular, and Hathor Mart completed the kill with a bolt round through the warrior's skull.
"I stand corrected," said Adamant, his thoughts drifting now that he had accepted the notion of his death.
In what he knew would be his last moments, he wondered what had happened to Lemuel and his fellow remembrancers. Adamant had not seen them since Callista Eris's death, and he hoped they had somehow survived this horror, though he knew they were probably dead. The thought saddened him. But if this battle had taught him anything, it was that regret was pointless. Only the future mattered, and only through the acquisition of knowledge could it be preserved. He lamented that he would never get the chance to replace all that had been lost on Prospero. A screaming wolf leapt at him, and Adamant put a bolt through its skull. It landed in front of him, and he recoiled in horror as he saw this was no wolf, but a monstrous beast clad in fragments of armour, as though a warrior's body had transformed into some hell beast.
"What in the name of the great ocean?" cried Hathor Mart, as yet more of the hideous melds of man and wolf came at them.
Something Othair Weirdmake had once said to Adamant returned to him, and he watched as yet more of the howling man-wolf creatures leapt to the attack.
"Wolfan!" he shouted, unleashing torrents of bolter shells into the mass of charging beasts. "And they say that we are monsters!" shouted Hathor Mart.
The Wolfen were once Astartes, but Astartes afflicted by a terrible curse.
Their faces were bestial, but with the last glimmerings of intelligence in the yellow depths of their sunken eyes. Matted fur covered their faces and hands, yet their jaws were not distended like a wolf's. Razor-sharp fangs and talons were their weapons, for the knowledge of technology was lost to these savage killers. Only the most accurate shots would put them down, and they shrugged off wounds that would have killed even an Astartes. Their claws could tear through battle plate with ease, and their teeth were as vicious as any energized blade. The single-minded savagery was unlike anything the Thousand Sons had fought before, and they fell back from these newly unleashed terrors, horrified that the Space Wolves would dare employ such degenerate abominations. The Wolfen punched a bloody hole in the Thousand Sons' line, tearing it wider with every second, and dozens of warriors fell beneath the tearing blades of their claws. Howls of triumph filled the air as the gap the Wolfen had opened was filled with custodies and Space Wolf warriors. Bands of Thousand Sons were surrounded and hacked down by frost-bladed axes and glittering guardian spears. Adaman backed along the great basalt causeway over the water towards the Pyramid of Fotep, their last refuge on Tiska. The best and bravest of the Legion, all that survived to sell their lives in sight of their Primarch, went with him towards the bronze gates that led inside. The howling of the Wolfen built to a deafening crescendo, and high above, those howls were finally answered.